And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello, and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today we have with us Kevin Orbach. Kevin Orbach is an attorney and a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. He practices in the state of California. Mr. Orbach received his law degree from St. Louis University in 1993. His work since then has been well recognized. In 2013, Parenting Magazine named Mr. Orbach as one of the nation's top child advocates for his work in fighting for the rights of children with special needs. In May 2011, he was presented the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys Presidential Recognition Award for his work in special needs planning. And from 2010 to 2015, Mr. Orbach was named a Northern California Super Lawyer and Best of the Bay Estate Planning Attorneys for San Francisco and Northern California. We have invited him to join us today at Lifestyle Improvement because he's also the co-author of the book, Special Needs Trust, Protect Your Child's Financial Future. Welcome to our program, Mr. Orbach, and thank you for giving us your time today. You know, the subject of creating a special needs trust may not be a common conversation piece among parents that have kids with special needs. However, it can make a huge difference in the financial future of these children. Please tell us, first of all, what is a special needs trust and why should anyone think about creating one?
Well, thank you for that very generous introduction, first of all. But second of all, primarily when we're talking about special needs planning, we're really focusing on parents of children who have special needs. That's our primary kind of client. Although sometimes it's grandparents, sometimes it's other family members. And what we're doing is we're setting up a plan for a child with special needs, and sometimes that child is 50 years old. The role of the special needs trust is really the role to enhance the quality of life of a loved one with special needs. And what we're looking for when we're doing a special needs plan is, how do we replace that lost parent, that lost loved one who's providing all the caregiving necessary for that person with a disability? And all too often it's that parent, and they know what a big job it is to take care of, you know, a child with Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, dementia, Alzheimer's. I mean, it goes on. The child can be a fully grown adult. And so what we do with a special needs plan is we put that plan into place. It's really an estate plan, but really designed only for a person with special needs. And again, part of the plan is financial, but a lot of it is to do with caregiving, advocacy, housing, and basically replacing that lost parent or lost loved one.
So anybody really that has any kind of needs in this particular area that thinks that they have someone vulnerable in their family should actually think about creating a special needs trust.
Pretty much anyone who has a loved one with special needs generally needs a special needs trust to leave an inheritance to them. Because if you decide just to leave it outright to them, it could interfere with their eligibility for public benefits. But also, a lot of times, people with disabilities are subject to predators and undue influence from others, and they could end up losing that inheritance to such predators. So what we're focused on is, how do we protect that inheritance? How do we protect all of that lifestyle that that loved one with the special needs requires for basically to have a wonderful life even after the parents are gone?
So you would say that the special needs trust helps because it ensures that the person you love that is vulnerable potentially to the things you just mentioned will be protected under this umbrella.
That's correct. So it's really a legal protection, because another common planning scenario I've heard some people come into my office with is, well, I'll just leave the money to a brother or sister and have them take care of their loved one with special needs. The problem with that plan, first of all, is it's not legally enforceable. So while we never blame the sibling, we'll just say the sibling marries somebody who's not, doesn't have that special needs person's best interests at heart, and they may decide to spend the money on something else. But even if there's not a nefarious person involved, sometimes that brother or sister could run into their own creditor issues. We always use the example, if they run a stop sign and hit a bus full of plaintiff's attorneys, they could have a huge creditor problem. And so if they have a huge creditor problem, all that money that's set aside for the loved one with special needs could end up going to a creditor.
And sometimes that person, that brother or sister could die. And if they die, that money might go somewhere where the parents didn't intend. So the special needs trust solves that issue. It sets aside the money so that it's legally that person with a disability. It's there protected. It's under a legal contract, which we call a special needs trust. So it's really the safest way to leave money to a loved one with special needs. And that doesn't mean that the brother or sister can't have involvement in making sure that that special needs trust operates in the best interest of that loved one with special needs. But again, what it does provide is legal protection. And that's really important in this area.
It is. It is. So tell me, how difficult is to set up a trust? Because when you hear that, you know, you think about legal, of course, you have to probably use an attorney. How difficult is it to go through the process, and what kind of paperwork would a parent be thinking about? And when should they be thinking about actually setting up that trust?
Those are all good questions. So primarily, setting up any type of legal documents, of course, I'll give you the typical attorney answer. It will depend.
Yes.
Will depend on the facts and circumstances.
Right.
So in general, first off, I think any parent who has a loved one with special needs should be seeking to establish a special needs trust, because you just never know when something could happen to you. And it's more important to set up a plan for a loved one with special needs, because if you don't, then that money by law is that person with a disability, and it could end up costing them public benefits. It could end up requiring a much more expensive court supervised process called a guardianship or conservatorship. And again, it just doesn't provide the same level of protection that a parent would want. So again, I always encourage parents or grandparents or anyone who has a loved one with special needs in their family to set up a trust right away. Now, depending on their financial circumstances and depending on how in detail they want to set up their trust, the book you mentioned at the outset by Nolo Press, N-O-L-O, titled Special Needs Trust, Protect Your Child's Financial Future. Basically, in there is a sample trust. And so I do a lot of seminars for parents of loved ones with special needs. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that seminar, invariably, I get the question, how much is this going to cost me?
Right.
I go out, I disclose what my fees are, and half the room is like, oh, that's fine. And half the room is like, oh God, I can't pay that.
Uh-huh.
And so for the half of the room that can't pay for that, that's uh-huh. why I agreed to write the book for Nolo Press, because it's a do-it-yourself special needs trust. Now, it's not going to have all the bells and whistles that an attorney-drafted trust would have, but it does protect the public benefits of that loved one with special needs. And there are also some additional comments in there about how do we protect for caregiving advocacy and all the other things that I think go into a special needs plan. So again, you could set up a trust for just following the special needs trust book through Nolo Press for $35.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking for an attorney drafted trust, that's where you're getting a lot more specific detail on your loved one with special needs, you know, requirements. And for that, I think it's extremely important that that be done with an attorney, because the attorney can explore things that many parents don't even consider. And a lot of times I'm sitting with parents, and again, the public benefits are important, but a lot of parents don't understand the requirements for public benefits, don't understand which public benefits their kids are even receiving or what they might qualify for that they don't even know exist out there. How are we going to manage the money if they're gone? And so an attorney can kind of bring out, you know, better quality of life for that loved one with special needs. An attorney who understands special needs issues can bring out the, you know, a higher quality of life, because they can usually direct that person to additional resources and funding sources and maybe not-for-profits or government agencies that can provide better care. So I think in short, which I've already gone beyond short, but in short, what we're looking at is basically how to set up a special needs trust in the most cost-efficient way for the family. And just my experience in doing special needs trusts around the country, you know, generally attorneys in this area will charge somewhere in the range of $3,000 all the way up to $8,000 or $9,000 to set up a special needs trust.
Mm.
And I would recommend that anyone in the audience who's looking for an attorney in this area consult with a group called the Academy of Special Needs Planners. And they have a wonderful website called specialneedsanswers.com. And in there, you can punch in your city and state and find a planner close to you who specializes in this area. And in addition to that, there's a whole host of topics on special needs. And there's some resources and information on what we call the 10 mistakes in special needs planning, kind of a downloadable summary of what special needs planning is. And then what, frankly, I consider the most important document a parent can set up for a loved one with special needs is a memorandum of intent. And there's a guidebook on that website that describes how to set up a memorandum of intent.
What is a memorandum of intent? This is your host, Rebecca, and now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
The Memorandum of Intent is a document that we use with the Special Needs Trust. And so the Special Needs Trust is the legal document where we are putting down our instructions for how we help manage that loved one's care in a legal way. And what happens is it's mostly a very general worded document. We don't want to put too many specifics in there because if we say, pay for this caregiver, you know, $30 an hour, 40 hours a week for the rest of our child's life, who knows next year if that makes sense anymore. So we don't want to put in too many specifics. But the memorandum of intent is a document that allows the parents to express their wishes. And it's a non-legally binding document. But what we put in the special needs trust are the basically telling the trustee and other people responsible for managing the trust, comply with the parent's memorandum of intent if one was prepared. And in the memo of intent, I've had parents come in with one page basically saying, you know, here's our son, here's his disability, here's his doctors, here's his medications, and that's it. And then I've had one parent who sent me a memorandum of intent that was close to 80 pages long and went into basically every type of therapy they've tried, what worked, what didn't work, what family members they wanted to encourage visits by, what family members they did not want to encourage visits by, favorite, you know, color, favorite TV show, and just went into all that knowledge, all that information. It's in the parent's head. That if we lose them, we lose. So that's, and then every year I remind our clients, on your child's birthday, sit down with your memorandum of intent and update it. And as I tell them, the biggest document we use during the administration of a special needs trust is that memo of intent. As we go back and look to see, would the parents have wanted us to spend money on this caregiver? Would our parents wanted to have spent money on this vacation? Is there any reason why we shouldn't pay for this, you know, therapy? And so what we get from the memo of intent is really everything that has happened in that parent's life with their child or loved one that now we can, you know, go forward and make sure that our trustees and those responsible for managing the special needs trust, you know, we have a guidebook, really, you know, an outline of what the parents would have wanted. And that's really, at the end of the day, what we're trying to accomplish with a special needs trust.
So it's kind of like a letterhead that is in front or an opening to what the trust is going to be like or is going to look like.
It is. Although, like, it's, again, I like to think of it as a supplement to it. It's not, it's in addition to this. The special needs trust is the legal stuff, you mm-hmm. know, the mm-hmm. the stuff that makes everything else, you know, preserve benefits and provide legal authority to hire caregivers, to hire advocates, you know, to provide payments for housing. The letter of intent is like, you know, under no circumstances do we want our child to be in a facility, or under no circumstances do we want him visiting, you know, Uncle Bob, because Uncle Bob has been incredibly unsympathetic to our child with a special needs, you know, mm-hmm. unique disabilities. But we do want to encourage him to go to the summer camp. He gets great joy out of going there every year. So again, it's really everything that's in that parent's head about what their child wants. And one of the hardest things we have to do as somebody who runs a special needs trust is called a trustee. And so that trustee, when the parents are no longer with us, I mean, the biggest issue we have is, well, we want to make a, we've been asked to make a disbursement for this therapy. Is this something that we should do or should we not? Should we hold the money and use it for something else? And so if we have a letter of intent, we can kind of look at that letter of intent and see where the parents were on that. Because, you know, just like everybody else, everyone has unique ideas about how they want to raise their children, you know, what type of caregiving they want, what type of health care they want. And so we're, as much as possible, we try to honor what the parents have put into those letters of intent. So in my opinion, it's the number one document we need from the parents.
Perfect. So it really gives an idea of how important it is, the sequence of the paperwork in order to support the information for the trust. So before we went on a little bit of a different direction with the letter of intent, you were talking about a website that had lawyers that provided services that people could go to and get information. Would you mind repeating that website and talking a little bit more about that?
Sure. The website is specialneedsanswers.com. And Special Needs Answers is all one word. So, and it's a website that's hosted by the Academy of Special Needs Planners. And basically that group is a group of attorneys from around the country who do what I do, which is special needs planning. And when I talk to loved ones, you know, parents of who have children with special needs and we're setting up their estate plan, it's a very specialized type of planning. So a traditional estate planner might set up a will or a trust for anybody, but you really need a special needs planner to help set up a plan for someone with disabilities. And the reason it's so different is because we have to know the rules and laws on public benefits. And if you don't know the laws on public benefits, you cannot create an effective special needs plan. So that's what this group is. It's a group of people from around the country who this is their area of expertise. And then part of this also is an educational tool, because just because somebody might have a child with special needs doesn't mean they know everything about it. And since, you know, we represent thousands of families who have loved ones with special needs in them, we share information as a group with each other. Oh, here's this great new program. Here's a charity that's really helping people with special needs. Here's a bank or something who can serve as a financial trustee if we need one, because they really have a really good department. So it's that kind of interaction we have as a national group. And we're always, of course, also complaining about the government agencies, probably a lot like our clients do, because they tend to fight us a lot on these issues. So again, that's what this group is about. And again, there's a whole host of topics that are covered: disability issues, healthcare, public benefits, financial planning, you know, and then the primary public benefits we're really looking at are SSI and Medicaid. And so with those two programs, that's what we really focus on when we're helping families who have loved ones with special needs.
Okay, perfect. So going back to your book, Special Needs Trust, Protect Your Child's Financial Future, I think it's wonderful that you actually wrote this book to allow families that are probably or not able to financially afford one of those $3,000 or $9,000 trusts. Because when you hear the word trust, you kind of think, I think in general, most people think, oh, that's going to cost a lot of money to set up. That you were able to do this through your book to provide a guideline how to do it, do a basic trust for $35, I think is a very, very nice thing to do. So the questions that I'm going to ask you now are kind of mentioned in your book. You do go really in depth about the subjects, but I'd like you to give us just a general idea right now concerning this particular issues. You already talked a lot about the benefit of having one and who would benefit. How about alternatives to a trust?
So frankly, I don't think there are very many good alternatives to special needs trusts. I mentioned, you know, you not wanting to leave assets outright to a person with special needs, primarily for public benefits eligibility purposes, and primarily because I'm worried that they're going to be subject to predators. And finally, quite frankly, if we're setting up any type of inheritance, generally, I think most people are uncomfortable leaving assets to an 18-year-old, whether they have a disability or not. Mm-hmm. So we always try to set some kind of protection up. The other option that I also mentioned that I hear a lot is giving money to a loved, you know, like a brother or sister. And I also kind of explained why I don't think that's a very good idea. You know, one I've heard sometimes is just disinheriting the child with special needs, because if we disinherit them, they'll keep their public benefits. But again, you're running into that problem with there's no legal protection requiring anyone to use money that you kind of make them promise to help take care of that loved one with special needs. And even if they're willing to do it, they could hit that bus full of plaintiff's attorneys, or, you know, they could die, or they could have a spouse who's decided she'd rather spend money on a vacation than on her her brother or sister-in-law with special needs. So again, I don't think either of those are very good options. Other than that, there's really not a lot of, you know, available options that would protect a loved one with special needs. There are different types of special needs trust. The one I generally set up is an individualized one, where we're setting up an individual trust for a person with special needs. The mom and dad tell me who they want to be trustee. I usually talk to them about an advisory committee and other ways to manage that trust. But there's another option called a pooled special needs trust. And so that's an option also. You could leave it to a pre-existing trust. And what a pooled trust is some of the national charities for people with disabilities have set up special needs trusts for their consumers. So, for example, the ARC has a lot of special needs trusts around the country. And what they do is, and this might be another option for people who don't have a lot of money and they want to protect it, but they don't really want to have to spend the money to set up their own special needs trust, or they may not have anyone to name. They may not have anyone they trust to manage money for their loved one with special needs. And so that's what the pooled special needs trust does, is it's run by the not-for-profit or the charity. The person with a disability would end up joining that trust if the parents set it up so that their inheritance goes directly to it. And then they would make requests of the charity, can you pay for my cell phone bill, internet, or whatever? And then they will pay for that, and it will preserve public benefits, and you have somebody there managing it. So in our website that I mentioned, specialneedsanswers.com, there is a tab for pooled trusts, and that is a list of all the pooled trusts around the country. Well, I should say, is updated a list of all the pooled trusts from around the country that we have. And just looking in the state of Washington right now, we have Lifetime Advocacy Plus as a pooled trust there. And it's a really nice tool if the parents don't really have anyone they trust to manage a special needs trust for their child or their loved one. It's also a nice tool if somebody just wants to make it easy, because really you're just signing a contract with them. And in your will or your trust, you're just saying, all my money that's to go to my child with special needs shall go to the pooled special needs trust. And that's it. There's no special additional language you need to draft. So that's another option that exists. The downsides of the pooled special needs trust are sometimes you're not getting that individualized attention that you would get if you had an individual trust. You're not able to put in a lot of special requirements or requests to say, for example, I want them to live in the family home for as long as possible, because a lot of pooled special needs trusts will not accept real estate, for example. So it's not a really good option if you have very unique requirements. But if you're looking at a special needs trust that might be funded with less than $50,000 and you want to set it aside for that person with a disability, then a pooled trust might be a good option for that amount of money. And I should mention that the public benefit programs, one of the reasons we have to set aside money in a trust is for SSI and Medicaid purposes, people are only eligible if they have less than $2,000 in their name. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's really difficult to leave a money to a loved one with special needs without interfering with their public benefits.
I see. And I imagine that another important thing to remember is how actually the funds can and cannot be used, correct?
That's a great point. The good news with this kind of special needs, then, in our business, we call this kind of special needs trust a third-party special needs trust, because the money that's being used to fund it comes from someone other than the person with a disability. And so we call that third party. And the government is really relaxed about what rules have to be followed to make that trust legal. And in that respect, it really is as broad as distributions can be pretty much made for anything. And we always say anything that's not illegal or against public policy. Some of the rules that do come into play, though, is, and these are rules of the public benefit programs, not really special needs trust rules. So if somebody is, say, on SSI and you give them cash, the government says, well, if you're getting cash, we're going to treat that as a type of income and we're going to reduce your SSI check dollar for dollar. So if you give somebody $100, they usually let you give them $20 for free, and everything after that's a dollar for dollar reduction off their SSI check. So they would lose $80 off their SSI check. That's true if a parent gives a child with SSI money, or if a special needs trust gives cash directly to an SSI recipient. So the way to handle that is, let's say they wanted to use that $100 to pay for their cell phone bill. Instead of giving them cash, you would just write a check directly to the cell phone provider, AT&T or Verizon or whoever. And that way, there's no effect on benefits. So one of the limitations is usually not giving cash directly to the beneficiary. And in many cases, that's usually a good idea anyway. But, you know, sometimes it's not. Sometimes people have full capacity to manage their own affairs, but maybe they're quadriplegic or paraplegic, but we don't want to interfere with their benefit. So it's kind of frustrating for them because they have capacity to manage their own affairs. They just have a disability that prevents them from working. And so now the government is telling them, but you can't manage any of your assets and keep benefits. You can manage your assets, but if you do, you're going to lose public benefits. If you want public benefits, then you have to give up control to somebody else.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Lifestyle Improvement for part one of our interview with Kevin Orbach. Kevin Orbach is an attorney and a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. He currently practices in the state of California. He is also the co-author of the book, Special Needs Trust: Protect Your Child's Financial Future. Thanks again for tuning in to Lifestyle Improvement. And don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 for part two of our interview with Kevin Orbach.